Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 228 of Nerd Pride Radio. 228, that's the number of years it would take the average American black family today to earn the level of wealth of the average white family. That's
Whoa.
A fact. That's a fact from my brother Kyle. Thank you, Kyle, for doing all my grueling research. He even provided citations and everything. So,
Kyle, that's dark.
Well, it's also true. Well, at least according to the research he has. So ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me.
Several hours later. How are you doing today?
I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride smells exactly like that sulfur tang you get when you dispatch a Kandarian demon.
Kandarian demon.
That's right. All the men in my life have been killed by Kandarian demons.
Keep getting killed by Kandarian demons.
Well, whatever. They just did the Evil Dead musical at the high school here. And Noah actually got to be... They lost their curtaineer. And so at the last minute, they asked Noah... You know, 5 days before showtime, if he wants to run curtains for him. So he says yes. And then the day before the show, they decide that, you know what, he needs to be in when they do the dances too. So, he got to dance the time warp, which they do for intermission, and then the big final dance. So it's cool. Very cool. They like the time warp. So, it was a lot of fun. But, you know what? We gotta move quick because I've only got about 30 minutes today. And so we're going to make this a short podcast, see if I can actually squeeze it all in.
Maybe we could just leave it on during the scout meeting with listener betrayal still up, and then at the end a super long listener betrayal.
Right, but then by the time we get all done, then I don't have time afterwards to finish up the recording. So we got to do it all now. So we get to the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast, which is the time for me, where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. No, I don't care what they think.
Oh.
If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. And the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record.
Just like the blood of a Kandarian demon.
Just like the blood of a Kandarian demon. You lucky dogs. So, straight into that master list, we're going to start off with the gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. And this week we have just one game called Sephiro.
Oh my goodness, let us tell you about Sephiro.
My wife went to a conference this week, and she picked this up while she was out of town and brought it back for us. And it is really good, guys. The game is a wooden board that comes in four pieces. You kind of have to
imagine
puzzle
dots
together.
And boxes with different color lines, and you have to have six lines connected to one dot before you can collect a dot.
It's dots and boxes. Yeah, it's essentially you have gems all across the board.
You have to collect six different colored gems
and
to win.
you've got gems scattered across this board, and each pair of gems is connected by a segment between them. And so you've got these little domino pieces where you have to get a matching color. So if it's a red and a green gem out there, then the only piece you could put between them is a matching red and green piece. So you're drawing them out of the box like dominoes, and then you have to place these pieces down. And if you can be the one who places the sixth piece surrounding a gem, then you get to gather that gem. So yeah, it's like dots and boxes. If you're the one that puts the last piece in place, then you get to capture that one. And the first one to get all six colors of gems wins. All right. And a lot like dots and boxes, you wind up, you fill up every available space on the board until there's nothing left. And so now it's like, no matter where I go, I'm going to leave an opening for somebody. And sure enough, once the openings start appearing, then people start snapping up and it's like a chain reaction down the line. But it has the added complication of, you've got multiple people playing and you are trying to, not just gather the most, but rather gather six different colors. And
yeah, so if someone were to, say, collect all five purple gems, then, well, it's just game over for everyone else.
Right, you can certainly try and block people.
Unless someone else grabs all five of a different color, then it's a tie, but that's probably very rare.
So, anyway, the whole point is, it's just a really satisfying game to play. It's a wooden board, and the spots for the gems, and then the spots for the little domino pieces that go in there are all cut out of the wood. And so you're just laying them in these little wooden pieces that you lay in into the board. And
tell them about it's the just, pieces of the board, Dad.
It's just very satisfying to fill in all the spaces and watch the patterns build and grow. And
quickly,
I played it. Yeah, go ahead.
There are four pieces to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Each one has the exact same cutouts for the diamond tiles.
They're not going to be impressed by this, but go ahead.
And so, yeah, but there's 109, and it just has one cut-off corner on the for the center piece.
Right,
that's cool.
Right, the thing we found out is you've got four identical board pieces, and when you stack them together, you can see that all the holes lined up. So if we count the number of holes, well, then we should just be able to multiply by four and come up with the total number of pieces. And yet, there's 109 pieces. So how did we get an odd number? And we wind up looking and we realize, oh, up here at the top at where the center of the board would be, there's a little diagonal slash that cuts off all four. So when you piece them together, it forms that last odd numbered piece right in the middle of the board. But anyway, the point of this is it was just a really fun game. And it's one that I was surprised that, cause we played it, me and Lisa played it yesterday and had a great time with it. And so we introduced it to the boys today, and Eli and Noah both, I mean, it was just a quiet game. As they were both concentrating, plotting out strategy, you could see them thinking ahead. Eli ultimately won. But it was just a lot of fun. And both of them.
I was second place. That was last.
Yeah,
he
what?
Had three. I had four.
I let you win. It doesn't count.
I had four.
So, but it was nice that we got done. Both of them raved about how much fun it was, that they'd like to play it again, that it was good. It just has a very, it feels like a classic game. It feels like one of those things you would, you're visiting grandma's house and you're like, well, what's this on the game shelf? And you pull down some old game that you've never heard of before. And that's what this feels like. So we went and looked it up. No, it was published in 2016, wooden pieces and all. And it's very clever. It's a really cute game. It turns out to be there's a little bit of luck in it because you have to draw the tiles out of the box, but you always have six in front of you. And like Eli got five gems, and he only needed one left. He only needed green, and he could not draw green to save his life. So random luck could have pushed him out of this game, but finally he got the piece he needed, and he was able to distract us with a play over on the other side so we didn't see what was going, and then wound up building his finale,
and
he won. So
and
it was really good.
A move that I call chucking a piece. And that's just taking a piece you don't need and placing it randomly on the board.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of strategy in it that trying to track down, okay, because if you've played every piece on the board and each piece only fits in certain slots, when you've played the pieces, there's exactly enough pieces to fill every spot on the board. So there are times when you're like, if you examine the whole board, you can go, I've got the last red-green piece in my hand. So, okay, that means I'm safe to do anything that forces this red-green area. I'm safe because I've got the only one of those left. Or when you're looking out and going, okay, nobody needs purple anymore. So therefore, it doesn't matter if you start filling up purples because no one cares anymore. And it's little strategy things like that that I realize after a few plays, I'm going to learn a lot more about this game. But it's a lot of fun. So, Sephiro, not expensive, really simple to learn, and everybody enjoyed it. So, you know, if you like a basic strategy game, this was a good one. Really good
one. It's about a 9.
Yeah, it was really
9 out of 10. It really
the kids
good.
Really liked it. So, all right, now it's time for the science corner.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something.
Bum, 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 bum.
So we went bird watching this weekend, which not on purpose. We were just driving around and then we spotted some birds. And so we decided to look for birds. And, I've never understood the thrill of bird watching, but this was exciting. I kind of get it now. I mean, like enough that, you know, we're thinking, you know, if only we had a pair of binoculars, man.
We saw like 50 white herons on.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't start giving stuff away.
Sorry.
And the kids said, why don't we own any binoculars? I said, because we have kids. So if we had binoculars, they would be either A, lost, B, broken, or C, both. So you can't have a pair of binoculars when you have kids. But, God, it would have been so nice.
Are your current pairs of binoculars broken or lost? Yes.
Yes, they are. So what was most amazing, look, all right, first off, we did see some very large white birds and then one gray bird that were out on the water, out on this little lake near town here. And the gray one we were pretty sure was a sandhill crane, although, you know, what do we know for sure? It's not like we could get really close. And then, after some discussion, maybe it's not. And then the other ones were like, well, the other ones look very similar, but they're all white. And we would look it up, and well, the only white cranes that exist in North America are whooping cranes, and there's only like 400 of them left. So, to have a whooping crane right there where we happen to be, would have been phenomenal luck. But we posted it out, and, the agreement seems to be that, it's probably a white heron, or egret, same bird. So they were probably egrets. And then we went back later, there's tons of them. They're definitely not whooping cranes.
If they would have done something differently, they would be regrets.
They would be. So knowing that those are probably egrets, white herons, then that means that the larger gray bird that we saw, probably a blue heron. But, well, what do we know? They were gorgeous. Just wonderful. I mean, the wingspan on these things was just enormous. But those weren't the coolest ones. No, the coolest things that we found, we pull up and we're like, what the heck are those? Oh, those are ducks, right?
Those are tiny black mallards.
They look like they're little black ducks, except they're little black ducks with white beaks. And my wife, who is a farm kid, says, I have no idea what kind of ducks those are. So I look it up and I said, black head, gray body, white beak. And so I look up ducks, and it tells me that it's not a duck, even though it's got a head just like a duck. I mean, it's got a duck's bill on it and everything.
It waddles like a normal bird.
All right, just wait. It turns out it's a coot. It's an American coot, COOT. Yeah, they're adorable. And the thing about coots is they are unbelievably prolific. They are everywhere. If you are in North America, you are within a stone's throw of a coot population, more than likely. They are everywhere on this continent. They are far from endangered. They are just massively prolific. And the weird part is, I didn't know that that was a thing. Like, until yesterday, my wife and I both were like, I've never even heard of a coot. I didn't even know that was a bird. How do I not know that's a bird? I imagine if I go ask friends and family who are hunters and stuff, I'm sure all of them would go, oh, yeah, no, that's a coot. Yeah, no, it looks like a duck, but you don't want to shoot those. So if we were telling them about this, they would make fun of us, just as I'm sure some of you are going, well, duh, it's a coot. What? You didn't know that? Although, I tell you what, I went to go type this into my master list, and spell check doesn't know coots. So it will do coot, as in if you're going to call someone an old coot, but you can't use the plural coots because it doesn't understand that that's a real thing. So spell check is as ignorant as I am, if that helps. But they are just cool little birds because, yeah, they look a lot like ducks, but they're not. And once you realize that, you're looking at it going, oh, yeah, the body shape is a little bit wrong. It's got that head of a duck. It's got that face of a duck.
Also, they're like but, the clowns.
Yeah.
Clowns via feet wise.
But they don't have webbed feet. They have actually much longer legs than a duck once they stand up and run. When they run, they're funny. And they don't have webbed feet. But because they do swim on the water like ducks do, instead of webbed feet, they have basically big old floppy toes, like wide, loose, flappy skin around the toes on each foot, so that when they swim, those flaps help them go faster. Look up coot feet, and you'll just be amazed at the image. I can't even describe it. Like, we saw the thing on the internet, we're like, really? That's what they look like? And we're trying to see because they're walking in the grass, and it's hard to tell. But then the minute they start walking across the pavement, you're like, oh my god, they do have weird feet.
But they're still adorable no matter what.
Yeah, they were cute. And they don't waddle, as Noah pointed out. They don't waddle at all.
They walk like a normal bird.
They walk like a bird that's meant to be on land. So they know what they're doing. So that's the coot. We were just floored. I learned something stunning and new yesterday. That there's this animal that I've seen this animal thousands upon thousands of times in my life. I've been in the outdoors enough that I must have seen tons of these things, and yet I've never known that that's what it is. If I ever registered them, I probably just went, oh, yeah, ducks, and then never thought another thing about them. And so I learned something. It was exciting. I mean, heck, if my wife hadn't insisted that we look them up, I would have just written them off as ducks and driven away. But she finally said, they're too small for ducks. I'm like, oh, come on, ducks have to come in tons of sizes, right? But she insisted that we needed to look them up to find out what kind of duck they were. And sure enough, coots. Not ducks at all. Go figure.
They're very, very adorable, though. I just have to admit that.
Here's the thing.
The hatchlings must be super adorable.
I have such a fondness for coots now because of this experience that I really dig these animals. And so I'm thinking, since they are prolific North American wildlife, I feel like we should mint brand new dollar coins in this country, because I've been saying we need to redo the money in this country anyway. All right, stop making collectible coins, stop making the presidential coins and all this other stuff. Just get rid of dollar bills and make our new dollar coins with coots on them. And then that way, much like the Canadians and they put loons on theirs, we could put coots on ours, and then they'd eventually our dollar coins would be affectionately known as cooties. It would be awesome.
No.
Yeah, no, come on. This is my plan. We'll have the cooties. And then when we make the $2 coins, they'll be known as tooties. It'll be awesome. All right. And this is not a plan that's going to catch on, but I'm still really fond of it. I would love to see dollar coins with coots on them. They're great. So here's the thing. I was just about to move on to the next segment, but because Noah said, I bet their babies are super adorable. So Lisa looked them up, and Noah, report.
They look like little babies. Vulture demons.
They are hideous. They're not baby pigeon ugly. If you want to see the ugliest babies in the world, go look up baby pigeons. But they're pretty close. Baby coots, coot hatchlings, whatever you want, cooters. I don't know what they're called. Yeah, they are hideous.
Mom, what so, are you laughing about?
So, spare yourself that. Just go look up their feet. It's much funnier. The feet are worthwhile. The babies, not so much. And guess what time it is now? Wait, you've never heard that music before? That's right, because this is the new official music for Trappin' Wits, entitled Trappin' Wits, written and performed by David Short, who is friggin' amazing. So, have you ever thought of the perfect comeback, the perfect response, but you don't think of it until it's way too late to actually say it? Yeah, well, that happens to me all the time, and the Germans, they call it Treppenwitz, literally staircase wit, that perfect line you think of after you've already left and you're on the front steps and it's too late. But lucky me, I have my own podcast. I get a do-over. Whenever I think of stuff too late, I get to bring it here and try it one more time. Okay, first up, last time we were talking about the end of one of, Aiden's movies, and Aiden's not here to remind me of which one. We had some feedback from Kyle on that feedback. But since Aiden is not here to respond, we'll save that for next week. But I did make a comment, because it was to say, oh, so the movie was really, really good all the way through, up until a really unsatisfying ending. And then I said, kind of like, and I couldn't come up with, I even said at the moment that I was struggling to find a good movie to compare it to. So I don't even know why it was such a problem for me. So you're saying it was really, really good right up until the last 5 or 10 minutes, and then the ending just completely ruined the rest of it for you? Yeah. You mean like The Village? Oh, wait. I'm sorry. You mean like Lost? I mean, the Titanic? These go on forever. So you could do a million of these, and I couldn't think of a single one because I'm terrible. So, all right, but that's not the only one. I've got more Trepping Wits this week. Last week, Emily asked, how do you deal with failure and disappointment without feeling like a failure? And I gave a very stumbling, rambling answer. And what I should have said after some of that stumbling and rambling, how do you deal with failure and disappointment without feeling like an actual failure? Part of that is you need to remember that a lot of what happens in life is outside of your control. I mean, when you see people who are super successful and they tell you that it's just because they wanted it more, or because, you know, they talk about their habits and how driven they were, and that, oh, they were destined to succeed and they knew it was always going to work for them. Yeah, you know, that's only part of it. Because there's lots of people out there who want it that badly and are super talented and they work super hard. Yeah, they work super hard, and yet they don't find that same success. It's because a lot of it is also opportunity and luck. So you can do everything right, and this just wasn't your moment. The right people weren't watching, or they were watching and they just happened to have indigestion and they were in a super foul mood that day. Or, you know, even, you know, yes, you have to have the talent, and yes, you have to work your ass off. But sometimes all of your best efforts are going to be sabotaged by fate, and that's just how things go sometimes. So don't try not to take it personally. And what you do is you re-examine what happened, and you figure out what parts of it were in your control, what parts of it you could do better, and those are the things you work on. If it's stuff you can control, great. Then you work to be better about that. And if it's not, then accept that as well. Realize that you're not in charge of everything. In fact, most times you're not in charge of a whole lot. So don't feel like it's your fault. Don't feel like you're a failure. Fix the things you can fix and move on. There you go. That's what I should have said. So that's a way better answer. But oh well.
I don't remember what my Trepping Woods was.
Did you have one, Noah?
Yeah, I did, but I forgot it.
Oh, all right. Then next week you can do a Trepping Witsception, where you flash back to now and remember that what you should have done was fix the Trepping Wits that you had from last time.
But I don't remember that. Trepping.
But you will by then. It's like a double Trepping Wits. Or if three times would be a triple Wits. See?
I know.
And then the last thing, and this isn't necessarily Trepping Wits, I just forgot about it. Maybe this should have gone in updates or something. But when we talked about Bachelor Party last week, I forgot one of the more egregious things that you wouldn't put into a movie today if you remade The Bachelor Party was Tim. And Tim, listed in the credits, is Tim the woman. And
She Tim.
There you go. And this was one of Tom Hanks's friends from the movie wound up falling for this very tall Marilyn Monroe type who, as you're looking at it, is very clearly very masculine. And this being the 1980s, he obviously sees none of that, and he is madly in love with her, and they wind up disappearing into the bedroom together. And then afterwards, he's talking, going on and on about how he thinks he's in love, and this is the one for him. And then she comes in, and they're both in the restroom together, and she winds up standing up to pee when she goes to the toilet, and then the guy loses his mind because, oh my God, he might have had contact with with a dude, and he loses his shit. And it was just kind of grotesque. It's the kind of thing that we don't play for humor, unless it's an Adam Sandler movie. We don't play for humor anymore. So, it was not funny. Although, interestingly, the actor that played She-Tim, I was surprised that, She-Tim had a whole list of credits, and I wish I remembered the actor's name, but had a whole list of credits that pretty much all of them involved him, as a drag queen, him dressing up as a woman, it was always this sort of role. So clearly, drag queen or female impersonator or whatever label was appropriate at that time. That's what he was, doing for a living and was getting cast in movies doing this. But again, to play it off for humor in that way, was a little gross. And not something we could have done. And I wish I had Aiden here because we should have talked about it last week. So there you go. All right. That is the end of the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. We are down to 26 minutes, so we're going to have to cut this off. We've got time for one Podomatic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Podomatic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Podomatic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you and Ronster come in. You guys want to hear me have Ron about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. Podomatic is about whatever you want to be. Oh, I'll add it to my Podomatic list. Podomatic is about whatever you want to be. There you know, you guys know the drill. We're here. And this is number 26. It comes from Ronster, speak of the devil. If you lived in Middle Earth, what race would you want to be? Well, that you could say Pathfinder or D&D, but it's Middle Earth, so it's slightly different. We've got different choices here. So, if I were in Middle Earth, I would want to be, whatever race it is that the kings are originally from. What? Oh, darn it. Now I'm showing my ignorance because I should really know this. But they look human, they act human, but they're actually like some offshoot of human. I can't remember where they come from. But they live for hundreds of years and occasionally are prone to magical power and that kind of thing. So that would be super cool. But I wish I had time to go look it up, but I don't. So, all right. So, no, I really don't, because we've got to do listener betrayal and then we've got to get to scouts. We've got, we've only got a couple minutes left. So that's it. That is the end. I'm going to have to turn it over to GLaDOS, and she will give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
"No way."
And then I was all, "We pretended we were going to murder you."
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's in the Garage, She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner, and Trepanwitz, written and performed by David Short. Except for Trepanwitz, all the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them, because I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, then subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and then write us a nice review, because those things really make a difference. But
actually, give us a crappy review. You just give it 5 stars. No one reads the reviews.
That's exactly right. Thank you for paying attention. You'll do something super nice, recommend it to your friends, because if you're enjoying it, you should spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. My contact information, Mike at Nerd Pride Radio, at Nerd Pride Radio on Twitter, facebook.com/NerdPrideRadio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me, you can sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out and become best friends in the world. We'll have fun.
Okay, see, my plan is here, is that I'm going to leave this recording here, and I don't want Mike to know about it until he's listening to it already, or even he might post it without even knowing it's here. But I just want you to know, guys, that I love you, and you guys are the best audience ever. Don't tell him about this. And yes, I do apologize for missing the podcast. I had other plans, but I'm here now, and I still have other plans to do after this, so I can't be here for the rest of the podcast either. So, I'm sorry, and I love you guys.
now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to the forums and Facebook and wherever else and post up, hey, I am recording anything you guys want to say. I'll read it at the end of the cast, which is what I'm doing right now. And to get through these quickly, let's see. First off, Facebook has nothing. Okay. Well, we were pressed for time anyway, so that's probably all right. Short notice, you know. Let me go to my forums, and my forums say, oh, hey, I have a response, and it is from Kaz. Excellent. All right, and let's see. Kaz says, there it is. He says, timing is everything. Oh, he got in apparently right after I posted this up. He says, love you, man. Keep up the great work. Thank you. Now, tell us how you will deal with Kyle when he is patient zero of a zombie outbreak. All right. Whether it's Kyle or it's my wife or it's my kids, here's the thing. It's zombies. You know it's zombies and you know what needs to be done. And so I'd get up there and I would have the gun ready and then I'd break down and I wouldn't be able to do it. And I'd think, you know, maybe there's still people on the inside, right? I mean, zombies, it can't be like they show it in the movies. It's not like every book. It's not like, I mean, come on, these are real people this time. These aren't monsters. And then they would eat my face. So there you go. That's how I would deal with patient zero in a zombie outbreak. Yeah, I know. It's not heroic, but it's what I'd do. Because honestly, I can't for a moment believe that zombies actually operate in real life the way that they exist in books and movies and other things. Because it just seems so, yeah, I don't know, cliche, right? And then it turns out that they do, and now I'm dead. So, oh well. Oh, no, you know what? Turns out, my wife was nearby when Kyle happened to turn. She said she could kill him with no problem. So I think we're settled. I said, you know what? We're fine. Guys, I'm all right. I can keep recording. All right. So let's see. And then after that, that's all I had on my forums, but I did have, from Dave, because I happened to be messaging with Dave at the moment I started recording. And so I said, hey, gotta go because I'm recording. You got any listener betrayal? And apparently he did. He's setting up, I think, for a concert somewhere. But he had enough time to say, hey, what was the hardest part of putting together the lovely Godbolt prototype you made? Oh, God, dealing with my annoying, asshole, selfish partner. That's what the hardest part of it was. This guy is nuts. He won't listen to reason. That's the problem. No, the hardest part of doing the prototype, because we just finished. Yeah, thank you for working this in. We just finished putting together the new print and play version of Godball, and so we'll have this prototype ready for people to start downloading and printing up on their own probably within the week. Still tightening up the rules. But the hardest part, man, it's just the tediousness of it. There's some really exciting parts, like getting the spreadsheet with all of our card statistics in it, getting that spreadsheet to translate into a printable version, and then, you know, Dave did all this really nice work in Roll20 where he put colored borders around stuff based on what kind of card it was. So, you know, terrain cards are bordered in blue, and blessings are bordered in green, and this kind of stuff. I thought, boy, that would be really cool. And then figuring out how to make Excel do that for me was really cool. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. So I was enjoying that. But then it gets down to the point where, okay, now we've done that, but now we need to, you know, break out individual card graphics. And so then it was a lot of sitting there with paint and just, you know, doing the exact same thing over and over. So, all right, pull up this one, cut out that section, paste it into a new document, save as this file, pull up the next one, save it as this file, etc. And it gets tedious. But I would also like to point out that when you do see the Godball prototype, you got to know that everything that you see was done in paint. Dave and I, apparently both of us, we have become masters of MS Paint, and we don't bother to use any other graphics software. And so everything you see is entirely done in paint, which is really impressive because I think we've come up with a pretty good looking game. So I'm really happy with it. But yeah, the hardest part is just the like I say, the tediousness. Once you know what needs to be done, but then they're sitting there and cranking out, you know, one after the other of doing the exact same thing, and it's, you know, after a couple hours of that, you get a little tired. But then Dave continues and says, do you have any co-hosts? I did when I started, but they've scattered now. What was their favorite part about being in the player musical? Their favorite part was just getting to do it. I mean, Noah was so thrilled just to have been asked, because normally you got to be junior high or high school, so 7th grade and above. But as a 6th grader, he just happened to be available, and so they grabbed him. And he was not the only 6th grader. There was one other, a girl whose sister is in the play. And he was just, he was tickled. They even, before the show started, the director made an announcement and said, oh yes, a correction to your programs. The curtaineer is being taken care of by Noah Jones. And he was thrilled that they mentioned his name, that he got a chance to participate. He actually got out on stage and got to dance the Time Warp. So he was thrilled, just excited just to be a part of it. Eli, again, the performing of it for him seems to make him happy. He likes it when it all comes together at the end. Plays can be so frustrating as there's so many moving parts and so many things to take care of. And you can see the anxiety and frustration build up. And then you get down to that final week when it's obvious that, oh, this is all going to work. And that is so satisfying to Eli. He loves seeing it all finally come together. He also, though, one of the best times he had all year was when they had an open call for anyone involved in the play who wanted to show up and help paint sets. They needed help getting things painted. And so Eli showed up for that, and it was literally him and two other people, and they were all younger. And so the three of them just worked all day, just getting some stuff done, and they had a blast. He said that was one of the most fun times in the play. It's just a small group hanging out and getting some real work done. He said, again, really satisfying. So I'm sorry they're not here to answer it for themselves, but, you know, scouts and all. But here we go. Let's see. Also from Dave, having gone through a goodly portion of the game design process, what do you think is the most interesting part? What have you discovered is the biggest challenge? The most interesting part of game design, wait, hold on. We'll get back to this one. My wife is actually calling the kids right now to get their answers to what their favorite part of the play was. So we'll see how well my answers line up with theirs. This will be cool. Eli, answer your phone. I don't think he's going to answer. We may have to try another phone.
I'm sorry. The person you were trying to reach had a...
Oh, so mean. We'll try
Hello?
Aiden. Hey, Aiden! Are you at home?
No.
Oh, did you just drop the kids off?
No.
Is your brother Eli with you?
Yeah, we're dead on the side of the road.
Oh, okay. So he's too dead to talk?
You want me to go get him?
Yes. He needs to answer a question for the podcast here.
Eli!
This will work. Hold on.
What?
Hey, hi, Eli. I'm recording right now. Dave thought that you were going to be here when he asked this question, and he wants to know what was your favorite part about being in the play.
I don't know, to be honest. It was just I didn't have a favorite. I had so many things I had to do. It wasn't really.
When did you feel best about it?
I don't know.
Oh,
the whole time, I guess.
Okay, I had a better answer than that.
I can't figure out what part I felt the best. I tried my best at all parts.
That's true. And you
had... Was it that they kept giving you more and more parts to play?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because he started off with just one, and then he must have had, what, 4 costume changes, 5 costume changes through the whole thing?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. So, yeah, that was exciting. Is Noah close?
Yes, I'll get Noah.
Awesome.
The phone.
What?
We're recording the podcast right now, and Dave would like to know what your favorite part of being in the play was.
The time warp.
See, I said you just enjoyed being on there, getting the chance to do anything. So,
yep.
Time warp was the best part. See, that was easy.
All right. Love you.
I love you too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, they're so cute. Yeah, Eli's very much a grumpy teen. He does not like anything unexpected. All right, so let's get back to where were we? What was the most interesting part of the design process for Godball? The stages of it. I like the idea that we started with what we thought was a great concept, and I still think it's a great concept, but we had a really good idea of how this was going to work out. And we had this picture in our head, and as we talked about it, we're like, yeah, this is going to work. This is a real game. And then we playtested it, and we went, wow, there's magic here, and yet it's not really playable. And so we tried it again and again, and the evolution of it, the idea of responding to playtesting, the idea of trying something out, and then reworking huge sections of what we're doing while maintaining the core of what the game really is to us. You know, we want to keep that spirit that's at the center of it, but change the things that aren't working until they do. And that's just been exciting. It has been so exciting. The idea that okay, we realized that, at least Dave and I realized, the problem we had was that the characters aren't moving enough on the board. It doesn't feel like a real ball game out there. So we took all the magic powers out, and we played with just the heroes, and we worked out, okay, well, then what kind of maneuvers do they need? What kind of things should they be capable of doing that would make this an interesting game? And we worked that out until it felt like a real game of ball, and it felt like we were really playing, and it was exciting. And now we've gotten far enough that, okay, now it's time to start working stuff back in. And so we added the powers back in, and we started adding all the flashy lightning bolts and mountains raising and everything else going on. And once we finally got that to a point where it felt like it was working, it's like, all right, now it's time to take the next step, divide it up into the different gods and have a different flavor for each player out there. That, you know, if you want to play really vindictive, then you play Hera. Hera is mean and vindictive. She's awesome that way. And super powerful. If you want just direct to the action, the no-nonsense player, that's Zeus. Zeus is straight up about, hey, how do I get that ball to the goal as fast as humanly possible? That's all he wants. Aphrodite's a manipulator. Hermes is sneaky. He's more about the movement and the speed and the sneaking around. Poseidon is all about tearing up the terrain. Poseidon is, once Dave latched onto that, that really made Poseidon for me. He's not just the god of the oceans, but, I mean, he is. But he also, in addition to having all that water stuff going on, he can just raise mountains and level seas, and it's amazing what he can do. And that, it just feels right. So each god now has their own abilities. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, because I really like this game, and I like where it's gone. But that's been the best part for me of the design process, is playtesting and then responding to playtesting to create something that is the same game but better. And even when it's radically altered, it's still, you know, keeping that spirit there and making it better, and it's awesome. I really enjoy that. All right. And then the second part of Dave's question was, what have you discovered is the biggest challenge? The biggest challenge is just finding time to get it all done. That's, I mean, honestly, we enjoy the playtesting. We enjoy the reworking the rules. We're willing to put up with the tedium of actually hammering stuff out and doing the detail work. We're willing to put up with that because we like all the rest of it. It's just a matter of finding the time for all of it. I would love for us to be able to play God Ball twice a week and, you know, learn from it and come up, you know, expand it out to new groups and different people who've never played it before. But, you know, time is always a crunch. So, let's see. Then next, Dave just keeps going. It says, you've probably already talked about your Instant Pot. Yeah, I love my Instant Pot. It is awesome. Have you told Kyle about it yet? He'd probably be pretty stoked about it. I mean, he should probably get one, right? It would make things so much easier for him. Yeah, that would be a really good idea if Kyle got an Instant Pot. Kyle, have you thought about it? Have you thought maybe that with your family of, 15 kids or whatever it is you have, that maybe the gigantic Instant Pot that can cook gigantic meals in very little time would be really good for your family? Maybe? You should think about it. Yeah, I know. It is a thinking man's cooking implement, so it might be a little beyond his capabilities, but his wife is super smart. I bet she could help him. So you should try it. It's awesome. Let's see. Next up, Dave says, what game has Aiden got you interested in playing? Was it hard for him to convince you, and how does he feel about it? Well, he's not here, but more than anything, it would be Magic. I mean, look, I have other I have other people who tried to get me into magic, who tried to convince me, but it was really once Aiden started playing and showed me that it was actually doable, I'm like, oh, okay. And it turns out I really enjoy magic. I mean, magic will never be my first game I pull down off the shelf, but it is such a social game and it's so widespread that it is a great thing to have in my arsenal and know that, look, I've got a couple of decks ready, and if it's ever going to be, if it's Magic Night, then all right, I guess I can participate in Magic Night. And, you know, I can socialize and get on in there with everybody. And I'm really glad that that has happened. And so, and my apologies to all the other people who tried to get me into Magic before that, and I rejected them out of hand because I was scared of collectible card games. So, let's see. And then, okay, how do you feel about Bernadette Peters? I don't know. I've always liked Bernadette Peters. I thought she was funny, not anything special. She's a little before my time, so I'm not I remember Bernadette Peters being in things when I was a kid. That's about all I remember. And I remember liking her. She was funny. But, and how about Mandy Patinkin as a stage actor? I like Mandy Patinkin. I don't know about him as a stage actor. I've never seen him as a stage actor. But, you know, I like him. I don't know. So, let's see. I've been reading a lot of articles about Take That mechanics. They've, on the whole, been pretty negative about them, like they're out of style at the moment. How do you feel about them? Okay, Take That mechanics, where it's essentially the, if I understand them correctly, the idea of a Take That mechanic is that you build up something of your own and then you spring it on the other person and is basically to take them down a peg, that you've now foiled their plans or, haha, deal with this, and you've sprung your trap. And yeah, they don't seem to be in fashion so much. I don't have a problem with them. I mean, I grew up in a family of poor sports where, you know, friendly competition among my family and among my friends, friendly competition meant a lot of trash talking and a lot of ribbing other people and a lot of teasing. And so I take that sort of thing that fits right into that mentality. I don't have any problem with it, but you also have to be with the right group to do it. Not everybody enjoys that sort of, that style of camaraderie. Not everybody enjoys that style of competition. I don't know. Again, it's the kind of thing that, we had sort of a discussion about this about Godball. Is Godball a Take That sort of game? And I suppose on some level, but the more I think about it, for the most part, you're not disabling other people as much as you're building yourself up. I mean, yes, there are cards to disable others, to steal things from them too, but it's not so much a sticking it to them sort of thing. We've always given it an out, a way that you can kind of lessen that blow if you need to, a way you can buy it off or you can find a way out of it, replace it, whatever you need. Unless you're playing Hera. Again, Hera, vindictive. And Hera is intended to be the kind of person that when you wrong her, she has the ability to wrong you back and will gleefully do so. But, you know, I have nothing against it. It is not, it's not a part of most of the games that I've been playing lately. So yeah, you're right. I think it's going out of style, but I also don't have a problem with seeing it around either. Let's see. And oh, sure. Now feel free to turn any of these into Podomatics if you don't feel like reading them at the end. Wait, no, it's too late. I've already read them all. You can't say that at the end. And then he signs off with, so how's R2 doing today? Enjoying himself? No, he's a little pissed off that he only got one, but that's just the way it runs. So, we're all done. So, say goodnight, Lisa. Goodnight, Lisa. Say goodnight, R2. Love you guys. See you next week. Thank you for being here.